Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, daughter, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Hello, Elizabeth. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, Hank. I'm so happy to be here today.
Mm-hmm. Did you want me to punch the word daughter a little harder there?
Punch it again.
Okay. Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, daughter, mother, grandmother, licensed.
Thank you. Yeah, today we are talking about daughters, particularly the relationship between fathers and daughters. And I'm a very proud daughter of a very strong father. So I'm really excited about today's conversation because my guest today in the studio has written a one-woman show about her experience growing up with a very strong father. And one of the things that my guest, Polly Frost, talked about in introducing her show was this question that I've grappled with for many, many years, which is, do strong fathers create strong, resilient daughters, or do overbearing strong fathers weaken or cripple growing young women? And I think that's going to be a fun topic to discuss today. And I think it fits in nicely with kind of our theme of this month of talking about family relationships. Over the last couple of weeks, we've talked a lot about Murray Bowen's work and systemic family therapy and looking at the patterns of our relationships and how we tend to consciously and unconsciously carry on those family relationships into our adulthood. So the relationships we have with our siblings that we talked about, that we see our birth order as oldest, middle, or youngest child influence how we behave as adults, or how our relationships with our parents can come into our own marriages, that we start to reenact or revisit the relationship we saw our parents have in our own marriages. And that part of the healing of our life, and everybody has a journey of healing. Nobody comes out of childhood without some sort of story that they have to rework in some way. And if you did come out of your childhood with a story that didn't need to be reworked, please call me because I would love to talk to you and know what that's like. But from my experience in the world, we all come out of childhood with a story that we need to rework in some way. But when we're conscious of those stories from our childhood or our teens or our young adulthood, when we're conscious of those stories that didn't quite work well, maybe it was a conflictual relationship with a mother or a father or between siblings, when we're aware of those, we can then see the patterns in our adult life and make changes to do them differently, to approach them differently. So in keeping with that theme of the last few weeks, especially important around this time of year where we're re-engaging with our families of origin over the holidays at all sorts of events and revisiting our old stories from our childhood and in some ways reenacting those old stories from our childhood, even if we don't want to. In keeping with that theme, today we are going to talk about Polly Frost's one-woman show and her relationship with her own father and what inspired her to write this show, and also to give all of you an opportunity to see Polly perform at Buttonwood Winery January the 10th at 3 p.m. So that's going to be an opportunity that'll come up, and we'll have more information about how you can get tickets throughout the course of this hour. But as always, I want to thank you for tuning in this week. I'm going to invite you to be part of the conversation. We'll open up the phones in a little bit so you can call in with your own questions or comments or concerns. I'm hoping that this conversation will inspire a lot of thought or a lot of different, ways of being engaged with the material. And our number is 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation by checking out our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. If you like the page, you'll get information each week about upcoming shows. And I like to post pictures also of our guests. So I think I'll post one of Polly and I after the show today. You can be part of the conversation on our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. Send me an email to Elizabeth at thereluctanttherapist.com. You can go to kcbx.org and podcast the shows or listen to shows. And then finally, if you go to iTunes, you can podcast our shows, look for The Reluctant Therapist, and they'll just automatically go to your phone. And I think I told you, Jordan, that I had looked at my phone the other day, and magically, I think one of my daughters must have subscribed to my podcast. And so I had 54 different podcasts on my phone, which was wonderful because I got to listen to them when I was driving up north last week to pick up Kelly. And I need to become even more technologically savvy because there's a lot of great things to podcast out there. So I hope you'll take the time to engage in the show in that way. And as always, the conversation's way more fun when it's a conversation and not a monologue. So I look forward to hearing from you in some way. And I'd like to thank Polly Frost for being my guest today. Polly, briefly, and I'm going to let you tell much more of your background, but Polly Frost is a writer, a performer, a Santa Barbara native. You have spent years writing award-winning pieces for everyone from Elle to New York Times to New Yorker Magazine. Had your play recently accepted into
Best American Short Plays and Monologues.
Pretty exciting. And then in the last few years, you've kind of transitioned a bit from writing as your primary focus to doing live performances, live shows, because of your desire to kind of reconnect with the oral tradition that you see kind of slipping away as we get more engaged in technology and things like podcasting and being able to record and maintain everything. And so, Polly Frost, welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much.
So, before we jump into the show, let's talk a little bit about your background and what led you to writing this show today and your journey to becoming a writer.
Thank you. Yes. Well, I grew up, I'm not exactly a Santa Barbara native, but I went up there from the time I was born. Santa Barbara is always a part of my life. And my parents bought a house in 1961. I'm 63 right now. So in 1961, I was, 8 years old. And they bought a house in Goleta that was very cheap at the time. And it was built by a beatnik architect who one day wore nothing but pirate boots to work on the house. And they moved up there when I was 15. So I do consider myself very much a Santa Barbara girl and very much somebody of the Central Coast.
And so throughout your years in Santa Barbara, you went to high school there, right?
Yes.
But you were telling me a story before in the air that you didn't spend a lot of time in high school, that
No.
you were always kind of your own person. And so talk a little bit about that dynamic. And also, let's introduce a little bit about your relationship with your father, who is the focus of your one-woman show.
Right. My father was a very brilliant man. He was a lawyer. And he wanted me to be a very specific kind of daughter. The key thing about my father that everybody always noticed is my father never looked at me. Ever. Every guy I ever went with would say, I don't get it. Why does your father never look at you? Well, the thing is, I believe it was because I looked so much like him. And my father wanted to be, he was a very much driven to be a myth of himself. He wanted to be this great success story. And I think I represented everything that was organic about him, everything that could be imperfect. I knew from the time I was 6 that I was not going to be this ideal daughter he had in mind. I knew I was a very wayward, artistic, creative boho chick, and there was nothing else in the world that I could be. So in high school, I think it kind of reached ahead between us because he moved up to Santa Barbara, but he basically worked in Los Angeles. He was a very, very high profile, very powerful lawyer in Los Angeles. And I would take my secondhand car. I modeled to make money when I was 16 in Santa Barbara. And I would take my secondhand car and drive up the Central Coast and ditch high school. And I would go to Big Sur and I would hang out in Santa Cruz with revolutionaries. And I would come home a week later and show up in high school. But I only graduated by dint of the fact that they decided they were going to get rid of me.
they just wanted you gone.
Yeah, they wanted me gone.
And how did your parents respond when you were gone for a week at a time? And it sounds like was your mom primarily at home and your dad was commuting back and forth? Or what?
They were both commuting back and forth and they were involved in their own thing. And it was great for me because I would come home and my mom would say, you know, the school called and they said you weren't in high school for the last week. Where were you? And I'd say, oh, Mom, I was hanging out with naked revolutionaries in Santa Cruz. What do you think? And she, oh, that's cool, honey. So, so it was a very different era in the late 60s than it is today. There were no helicopter parents. They were off doing their own thing. And, you know, in a lot of ways, I think was just great for me because I had these life-changing experiences on the Central Coast that to this day I am so grateful for.
And so
better than high school.
Yeah. Wait, don't say that too loud. You don't want to give any kids the wrong idea. So pushing forward a little bit, what inspired you then to write this one-woman show? I'm trying to pull up what you said about your father. The title is, "We Only Get One Father, So Why Was I Given Mine?" And so what inspired this autobiographical show?
Well, I had written about my relationship with my father before in a previous one-woman show, Bad Role Models, and what I learned from them. But my father died last February. I had never intended to write about my relationship in any depth about my relationship with my father, but I found my relationship with him was so difficult during my life. He always rejected who I was, and he, in fact, didn't speak to me for 10 years because I wanted to be my own person, and in fact sued me. He was a lawyer who sued me, and there was no lawsuit, and the judge dismissed it, but my father was just angry because at the age of 48, I told him I needed to live my own life. I was about to get my ARP card. I said, "Dad, I need to live my own life." So in the last few years of his life, he got back in touch with me, and so the show really came about as me needing to process, after he died, this very difficult relationship and not being able to do it in any kind of way that I ever had been able to with anybody else. And my husband, who is a wonderful writer, Ray Sawhill, and works with me and collaborates with me on projects, and he said, "You know, you're not going to be able to process it until you write about it." So I began to write about it last summer. And he was so right. I began to get up and perform my father and perform myself in this show and write about it. And that's the gift of art, don't you think? It's like, for me, it could transform all these feelings into that were negative into something positive.
I don't even know which direction to go because I want to say, why did he stop speaking to you for 10 years and what could he have sued you about? And what's interesting is that it sounds like that the conflictual relationship with your father actually was the gift of your strength and creativity. That in some ways, if he'd been overly nurturing or been the princess raising father, in some ways you might not have awakened that boho revolutionary spirit in yourself.
You know, that's a really, really wonderful question. And you're a therapist, I'm an artist. And so I see it from these very dramatic terms of, I think that Friedrich Nietzsche may have been right when he said that which does not kill us makes us stronger. On the other hand, I think that at the same time, I knew from a very early age that I had to be the person I was, that I couldn't be anybody else. I couldn't be the daughter my father wanted me to be.
Which was what?
He wanted me to be a straight arrow, high-achieving, good girl, and he would, in fact, favor women my age over me as a way of cousin. I had a cousin who was just always sucking up to my father and being the daughter that I wasn't. Mm-hmm. And my sister-in-law, my first sister-in-law, was the same way with him. And other women would come in and be mentored by my father, and he would hold them up to me as the daughter I wasn't. So that was his attempt to make me very jealous and therefore incentivize me to become the daughter that he wanted me to be. And it worked in the opposite because I have many flaws, but I am not a jealous person. And I'd say, "Oh, that's great if they want to do that, but I don't want to do that." Mm-hmm. So the thing that you're saying is an interesting one. I think that we have this karmic thing, and if we get in touch with it, we know we cannot be anything other than that person. And if we don't become that person, it's toxic. And I felt from a very early age that the greatest gift we can give our parents is to become who we truly are, because that's the only way that we recognize the divine gift that was given to us at birth of our individuality. And now our parents may not recognize that as a gift, but we have to honor that. Do I think my father made me more stronger by opposing me? Yes, I do. I have to answer that question, because in this way, as an artist, you encounter enormous rejection. And I told my father at a certain point, I said, "You know, Dad, when I have gone out into the world and gotten rejected, there's not a darn thing that anybody can say to me that you haven't already said to me. So thank you."
And I also find it interesting that you said you primarily reside in New York City now, as you have for years, and
yes,
the Central Coast, your second home. Did you feel you needed the 3,000 miles to give you the psychic space to be yourself?
That's another really good question. In some ways, yes, but on the other hand, New York City was at that time where you had to go as a writer to really realize yourself. It was the greatest thing I ever did because New York City, for all the problems, it is one of the greatest pieces of civilization and experiment in civilization that has ever existed, and I wanted to be part of that. I physically love the Central Coast, but artistically and intellectually, I just love New York City.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Joined in the studio today, my guest, Polly Frost. She is bringing her one-woman show, We Only Get One Father, So Why Was I Given Mine, to the Buttonwood Winery on January the 10th at 3 p.m. I think it's a Sunday, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And if you're interested in seeing this one-woman show, you can contact Polly Frost at me.com. Or give her a call at 805-450-9955 for ticket information. I guess I really want to know, is it before your father passed away, did he tell you he was proud of your accomplishments as an award-winning writer?
Well, that's a really interesting part of my show because that's the crux of my show, really. So you people will have to come to see the show.
Don't give it all away.
That's kind of really because I, as a daughter, I'm talking to a therapist here. As a daughter, I was in therapy a lot and talked about all these issues I had. I felt that I was my own person, and yet there was a part of me that desperately wanted my father one day to say, I am so proud of you. I think who you have become is so wonderful. And I, after his death, I had to examine, what had I become? Was it really through my own drive? Now, obviously, you, Elizabeth, have a lot of drive, and I do too, so we have that probably from our fathers.
Mm-hmm.
But was I really secretly just wanting my dad to tell me he really proved of me? And that's really the climax of my show. And the realization after that was what really propelled me into having to write the show.
If you'd like to be part of our conversation, we'd love to hear from you. 805-781-3875. What do you think about the father-daughter relationship dynamic? I'd love to hear how yours was. Or if you have any questions for Polly, she is very much an open book, as writers tend to be. So we'd love to hear from you. 805-781-3875. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the research that's been done over the years about father-daughter relationships, because it's an interesting dynamic. When I do my shows each year, I try to do a Mother's Day show and I do a Father's Day show. And, in honor of mothers, my phones light up for the entire hour. And just everyone wants to talk about their experience with mom and, these great loving experiences. And as Jordan knows, on our Father's Day shows, it's really conflicted. Our phones they don't ring as often. And a lot of the calls tend to be about really painful experiences with fathers. And so I always find that kind of sad, a little surprising, and just wondering, what is it about that father-child or father-daughter, since we're kind of focused on that today, dynamic that is so challenging? And it is because our fathers are our first love, right? That becomes the image of who we're going to base our romantic choices on as we grow up. Fathers tend to be a little more mysterious and absent as opposed to moms, who are the, first line of defense, so taking care of colds and rubbing backs and hearing stories. And so fathers, just by their being in very traditional homes, are the ones that are out making the money and then coming in to the household. And again, in kind of these mysterious, strong, silent ways, that can be a real struggle. We've also seen kind of transformations in the father role, especially post-World War II. Shakespeare talked about father-child dynamics, but we've seen a real kind of public shift in how fathers were seen post-World War II because of the shift in our economy with so many fathers going out to the workplace, right, going to work in the city and leaving families at home in the suburbs. And so fathers were even by distance geographically much more outside of the family system. And then through the 50s, 60s, and 70s especially with the high divorce rate. And so fathers by the end of marriages were now kind of eliminated from the family dynamic. And because we had this huge culture of families being transferred quite often and fathers working remotely. So we've seen for the last 50, 60, 70 years or so, fathers were really kind of pushed out economically from the family system. Culturally, there was this, fathers come home from a hard day at work and want their slippers and a pipe and the children should sit quietly and obey and be the reflection of fathers. And now we're starting to see this other shift over the last 10, 15 or so years with the helicopter parenting, as Polly mentioned, and then kind of this idea of fathers reemerging as the all-loving, all-adoring fathers raising daughters to be princesses. Mm-hmm. And so now we see this pendulum shift from the absent father with daughters growing up with what Dr. Karen Nielsen talked about, which is father hunger and this desperate need to have that affirmation of a father figure, to now this helicoptering, all adoring father who's raising princess daughters who now see no man as being good enough for them because their fathers have told them that they are perfect and infallible. And so we have not found that balance in our father-daughter relationships, that we still either swing far to the right of the father hunger or far to the left of fathers telling their daughters that they're princesses and no man will be good enough for them and impacting their adult lives. And so I'm curious to know how others feel about this. Where do you fall on that pendulum? What was your experience like with your father? 805-781-3875. And what is your take on that, Polly? I mean, have you noticed that shift? And how did
very
that
much
impact?
So. It's one of the things I talk about in my show.
And am I giving it all away? Is that
no, not at all. It's one of the things I talk about in my show, which is, and it's very interesting because I talked to a friend in New York City who's a young journalist. She's 25, and she has an extremely close relationship with her father. She talks, I mean, I can't imagine this kind of relationship where he tells her anytime she wants to come home, that's great, she can come home, and they talk for hours at a stretch, and he just thinks she's the most wonderful person in the world. And I said to her, that must be incredible. And she said, and yet, Polly, she said, you've had good relationships with men, and I haven't even had a boyfriend yet, a serious boyfriend, and I'm 25, because no guy can ever live up to my father and my relationship.
And that is very much what we see, kind of that dilemma of there is no perfect dynamic. You know, aside from we not wanting physical abuse in a home with a
right.
father and daughter, I mean, that aside, but there is no perfect way of father involvement and father absenteeism. We struggle at the end of that dynamic with our parent, I think, either way. I mean, to me, that's kind of the takeaway of child rearing and family relationships and kind of what led the show today, which is we all come out of childhood with some story we have to revisit and rewrite in order to have our own full adult experience, which you've talked about beautifully a number of times, which is this drive, this internal drive you had to need to be your own unique self and to be able to get that distance enough physically or emotionally from your father to be able to be that person. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Polly Frost, and we're talking about her one-woman show coming to the Central Coast on January the 10th. We only get one father, so why was I given mine? And I love this topic because it's embroiled in a lot of anxiety for people. I think maybe...
What do you think the anxiety is? That's interesting.
I think because there's a lot of anxiety about disloyalty, that to have conversations about conflictual or challenging relationships with fathers brings up the sense of being disloyal, that somehow if I talk negatively about my father, then I will somehow destroy him, which they write in, right? It's up in a lot of literary takes on how we can destroy our fathers metaphorically or physically. So I think there's a lot of fear to talk about the conflict. The downside, though, is if we don't talk about the conflictual feelings of that relationship, we never get to enjoy the positive parts of that relationship, that we bury those positive parts of the relationship because we get so hung up on the ways that the relationship maybe did not serve us. And that part of the healing, I think, for women with their fathers is to be able to dissect out that relationship, to find the ways that even the conflictual part of that relationship made us stronger, or maybe the ways that we were too adored caused us to have trouble in our relationships, and to be able to pull all the mess apart, to be able to look at it so that we can honor the great and put the negative in some sort of context or space.
Well, I think it's very interesting today that there's a huge emphasis in the culture on, is a guy an alpha or a beta? Now, I didn't grow up with that. That wasn't as strong in my day, although you were aware, as with my father, he was one of those men that other men, he was a leader, the kind of guy that other men looked up to. But that alpha-beta dynamic has come about really rather recently as something that's really crucial, and how women feel about having an alpha partner or a beta partner was not something I really thought about when I was younger, but it's something that really concerns young women today. So I see that as probably having something very much to do with this transitional relationship of fathers to their daughters. I think on the one hand, you know, the alpha father presents its issues for a daughter. On the other hand, he seems highly protective and able to handle the world. And the beta father, you know, is to a girl is like maybe somebody they can be really good friends with, but is not necessarily going to be that protective of them.
And so as a writer, how did you approach this very, you know, sensitive subject of your relationship with your father? Did you use literary context or text to help you look at your own relationship?
I did, you know, because first of all, there hasn't been that much literature about fathers and daughters in relationship to mothers and sons, or mothers and daughters, or fathers and sons. Fathers and daughters, as we were talking earlier, is Shakespeare's King Lear. That's a masterpiece about this relationship between the daughter and the father. The daughter who is honest with the father, who's the ruler, and the sisters who tell him anything he wants. And but there's not that much more. There's Electra, of course, which Freud capitalized on. But really, it's a really interesting topic that hasn't been dealt with that much dramatically. And I think part of that is because for so long, so many artists and dramatists were men. And I think that it is a very fraught, probably a fraught issue. I mean, Shakespeare would just go on and take anything on, you know. But I think it is that big question for a couple of things. I think because the male-female development, as you get to know yourself as a woman, is in relationship in many ways to your father, whether he's present or absent or however that is. So I think that for a lot of male artists to deal with that was probably rather fraught for them to do.
My guest is Polly Frost. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're talking about those very delicate, sometimes conflictual, probably often challenging relationships that daughters have with their fathers. And we are inviting you to be part of the conversation as well. We'd love to know your take on this or any questions you might have for Polly or for me. 805-781-3875. And you brought up this idea of that relationship between fathers and daughters is an interesting dance, because we start talking about the Oedipal complexes, right? The relationships that start to blur the lines between love and inappropriate love. And I keep thinking about, and if you're following the Donald Trump candidacy, but I love watching the New Daily Show, and they were doing a lot of talk about Donald Trump's inappropriate ways of addressing his daughter. I don't know if you're familiar with that. And they're talking a lot about how he makes references quite often to her beauty and being so beautiful that if he wasn't her father, he'd want to be in a relationship with her. And so I keep listening to this and thinking about how it is a delicate dance fathers do with their daughters, because on one hand they want to love and adore them and let them know that they're beautiful and strong and capable, but as young women reach adolescence, there starts to be that kind of distance that fathers take, either consciously or unconsciously. And I remember that with my own father. I can remember him backing out of my life and in ways that felt really sad, you know, that I didn't know why he seemed kind of cold. But as I got older, I started realizing that maybe there was this conscious, unconscious thing that he needed to separate out to, one, make room for me to go have relationships with other men, but also to not want to cross that line of being uncomfortable or saying the wrong thing or being inappropriate. You know, my father didn't have sisters, so he had no experience with young women anyway, but I really noticed that separation.
Had you been much closer before you hit adolescence?
Super close growing up. As a child, super close to my dad, huge. You know, he coached all of our teams. And so that was a real split for me that I look back on and say it gave me the space to go off and make my own relationships. But it was a relationship that I had to heal with my dad as I got older. And like you said, we always are waiting for our parent in some way to say, and I'm proud of you, and you've done a good job, or you've chosen well. But I do think that there is this kind of muddied waters between fathers and daughters of how much connection is appropriate and how it can start to feel inappropriate, and that we try to find that right way of being together. 805-781-3875. You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist on your public radio, KCBX. Bobby, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh. Hello. Well, number one, thank you so much for your Grinch episode.
I was a little worried last week, but I'm glad you tuned in.
No, it was great. I'm just totally supportive of your ideas, and thank you for that. And the other thing I wanted to say is just that Polly made a comment about there not being helicopter parents when she was young. I'm exactly the same age she is, and mine were. I mean, that is not a culturally, you know, complete assessment of that era.
So how was that experience for you then, if I might ask, your relationship with your dad?
Well, I had two dads, and so there were some complications early, but by the time I was in middle school, it was extremely stable, lovely, wonderful stepfather that we always just call father because that's what he was to us. And, you know, we had a great relationship. I wouldn't call him a best friend. I'd call him a good dad.
And so what made a good dad then for you?
Stability. I think that's the main thing.
But was it him just showing up
there,
or financial stability?
We needed him. Mm-hmm. He provided a framework for us to thrive and grow up in.
I always picture, because my mom had us watch Father Knows Best when I was a kid, and it was black and white. Even remember that show?
Yeah.
And you know, Dad kind of came in and sat with a suit on and always had kind of that wise fatherly thing to say. You know, he just, like, Dad was always there as the Yoda. Was it more that experience, or was it the dads, you know, taking you out and hitting tennis balls or teaching you to drive, or, you know, I'm...
Oh, yeah, he did all those things. He did all of those things, and it was great. And we were never best friends, but I respected him as my dad, and we had good times together. And, you know, what I want to say is, if we went away for a week without anybody knowing where we were, the FBI would have been after us.
Somebody would have noticed.
I have to say, Polly, I would love to have gone to Big Sur.
Well, I would have picked you up in my secondhand car.
Yeah, a lot. It is funny how... So
I wanted to ask you a question. I just love that you said that your parents were helicopter parents. So were you rebellious? Were you a hippie?
No, my sister was rebellious. We were both semi-hippies, but we we didn't run away.
Bobby, thanks for taking the time to call in.
Okay, thanks.
And it's good to have the perspectives because, again, there is no one style of experience growing up, right? We all carry mythology along our life's journey, right? All of us are living our own personal myth, to quote Joseph Campbell, who looked at this personal myth that defines our life, and that story, that myth that we have from childhood kind of shapes who we become as adults. We respond to that childhood in either rebelling or following that path in a way that's comfortable. I think I very much kind of followed my parental path with this, you know, kind of underground rebellion happening. And then as I got older, I gained more confidence, and some people directly rebel. So I think the thing that's fascinating is to hear people's different ways of creating their adult life story based on their childhood mythology. 805-781-3875. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Polly Frost. We're talking about her one-woman show, We Only Get One Father, So Why Was I Given Mine? And you're going to have a chance to see her perform this show at Buttonwood Winery January 10th. And for more information, you can go to polyfrost.com.
You can either email me for reservations, polyfrost@me.com, or call 805-450-9955.
And we'd love to hear from you at 805-781-3875. Taylor, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I just connected with the whole alpha, beta, father analogy there, and because I had a stepdad and who was an alpha, I guess the helicopter parent. And then my father, who I've always really, he was always just very open and, like, accepting with anything that me and my brother would have to say. And my stepfather was really difficult to handle, to be around, probably caused some rebellion. And it's just, we had maybe equal amounts of time with them. And with my dad, I find myself following in his footsteps he's a musician. And so I'm like totally fine with that. And I'm attracted to those kinds of people. But I also somehow find myself trying to heal my relationship with my stepfather, most likely, through these relationships also.
I'm sorry, Taylor.
Oh.
What do you think it would take? What is it in your head that it's going to take to heal that relationship with your stepfather? What is missing?
That I don't see. Because I don't talk to him anymore, mm-hmm. we never connected. It was always that he didn't want to listen to what children had to say, I think. Mm-hmm. When my dad was totally opposite, he wanted to know what children had to say. And maybe that's, oh, it's so strange to like analyze it now by speaking it out loud, but I guess to be listened to, maybe that's what a father to me seems like would do, or a good male figure would be someone who listens.
So in some way, you need to find time with your stepfather on a road trip or some sort of journey, right? Where you're kind of together over a period of time where you could talk and be heard without expecting him to do anything or fix anything, right, or have any great wisdom, but just to hear your story in some way.
I guess you're right. The thing is, though, is that he's not in my life anymore.
So that story might have to happen either in a long written statement that you, I'm always about the writing of the stories down, that he may or may not ever read, but at least you'll be able to have that say. And you may find yourself, you sound young, so
I'm 26.
You are young. So I have this, you know, I just want you to know that time is on your side, my friend, that you will find yourself probably revisiting this relationship at different times if you don't get to take care of it in that moment. But I guess my other question was, do you find your choice of partners influenced by either one of these experiences with your dad or your stepdad?
I think that, well, in my most recent and most serious relationship, it seems like it was probably both, because my dad is he's a whimsical and open-minded person, and then but then my stepfather was very close-minded and very like set in his ways and very directional with everything. And I guess, yeah, I'm attracted to people who are usually musicians and mm-hmm. but are set in their ways and maybe a little demanding.
Now, so
yeah, I find that.
It's interesting. It's a blend of both people. And I think, you know, just looking at some of the research on, you know, healing the father-daughter dynamic that we started talking about a little earlier, there's actually a book by Dr. Karen Nielsen called Between Fathers and Daughters, Enriching Your Adult Relationships. And she talks about, you know, educating yourself about the impact of your, you know, the relationship, and in your case with both your father and your stepfather, to look at how it's influenced who you are today so that you can be aware of the choices you make in partners going down the road. You know, you might be attracted to musicians who are whimsical, but if you're also whimsical, then you might find those relationships have a hard time gelling because nobody's really leading the path. And then at the same time, you might find yourself attracted to kind of the alpha, take charge kind of men because you are the more whimsical person. And to just understand, you know, what is the trade-offs for both of those kind of relationships and what's best going to serve really who you want to be as you move through your life. And it's all the more of that insight and that personal awareness you have, the better chance you have of having these great, healthy, long-lasting relationships. But I think the work you've already done, understanding that you had a different dynamic with your fathers, both step and your bio dad, are going to really help you in the long run. And you're probably going to write some beautiful music because of it.
And it's funny that you say going on a road trip, because I actually have a plan to go on a road trip in the musical sense and taking the music on the road. And also what I forget her name.
Polly?
Ross. Polly. Yes. Had said about needing to write it down, mm-hmm. needing to write it out in order to process it. It makes sense that if I were to go probably on a long trip and have a lot of time to think about it and like have to hash it out in words and onto paper, that it just seems like I'm being pulled in that way.
I highly recommend it. Because, you know, I think the thing is that when you are an artist, and it sounds like you have a strong artistic drive, you have to honor that, and you have to take these things that are given you. And, you know, Elizabeth is a therapist, and this is what her gift is to the world. But it sounds like your gift is music, and you owe it to both your father and your stepfather to take that relationship and turn it into some music.
Well, and what did you say, Polly, earlier, too, about the artistic gods?
The artistic gods will get very angry if you don't take the material that's given to you and turn it into art.
Yeah, I think I've felt that before.
Well, Taylor, we wish you well with that, and I hope you'll let me know when you come back with your story or the way that you take your adult personal myth and turn it into some sort of art.
Thank you so much. You both are inspirational and with a lot of perspective. It's great. I'm glad that I called you.
I'm glad you took the chance.
Me too.
Of calling
I'm glad.
You,
thank you for calling.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Polly Frost. We invite your calls with comments, questions, feedback, 805-781-3875. And is it Seaburn?
Seaburn, Sorthian, and she owns Buttonwood Winery, and she is an awesome artist, and she had quite a father.
So there you go. That's your introduction. Seaburn, how are you?
Fine. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Oh, good. Hi, Polly.
Hi. You know, Seaburn is somebody who I find completely inspirational in this regard because her dad, I think it's safe to say he was kind of a difficult father, right, Seaburn?
Yeah, that's partly why I'm calling.
So what is on your mind today?
Well, my father was very encouraging as anybody who wanted to make art. It was a very valuable pursuit. As far as he was concerned, it was the best thing you could do. And so I was encouraged on one hand and spent a lot of time making art and always going for his appreciation and that kind of thing. But I also had a horrible fear of him because he was a wrathful father. You know, he would explode and get angry and yell and stuff. And so there were two things happening, and I feel like I'm still dealing with this, you know, that art is the most important pursuit, but on the other hand, there's something about always trying to get love through it and appreciation and acceptance and that kind of thing through making art, and it really gets in the way.
Hmm. Well, tell me about how it gets in the way, like for you creatively or emotionally?
Yeah, it's all wrapped into the same thing, actually, just holding back and afraid of rejection and actually afraid of being threatening as an artist to other people, you know. And a lot of times just being very timid about presenting my work to the world. And I think that has something to do with, well, you know, they might not like it. And then I'm in a sense, I'm rejected. Mm-hmm. And as Polly said, rejection is a huge part of being an artist.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I find that, you know, when I think about Richard Feynman, who was a good friend of my father's, and looking at him, he was so encouraged by his mother and father constantly.
Oh, really?
For doing what he wanted to do. And you could see that in him. There was just nothing holding him back.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's interesting because, and maybe it's why I'm a therapist, but I always have found that the most interesting people are those who had the most colorful and dynamic stories, right? That it's within the mess of our childhood stories that our most unique qualities emerge, and that part of the dance of finding our voice is being able to embrace not only the light, right, the good that came in our early relationships, but the dark piece in them.
Yeah.
That how do we wrestle with, you know, this adoring father who could become volatile, and how much we learn as children to navigate all our relationships based on how we learn to navigate those relationships in our homes. Because I think in a lot of homes, there was the public persona parents and there was the private persona parents. And that if you grew up in a home with a parent that was adored outside of the house, but then was frightening within the house, how do we carry that dynamic into our life and express ourselves, you know, mm-hmm. with confidence? How it's almost in some ways, how do we allow our own inner messiness be exposed? Because I think sometimes when we grow up in a conflicted household, we want to look all good to the world around us so that no one will know that the private part of our lives was messy. So we try to only replicate the all good. And I think when we try to only replicate the all good, we block what makes us artistic, which is the messiness inside of us. And maybe it's embracing the messiness of that childhood experience that actually makes good art.
Well, I have I think Seaborn is, see, first of all, I find Seaborn so inspirational. She's such an awesome artist. And to me, she's such a wonderful person that I just absolutely adore, that I love doing my show at Buttonwood Winery, just with working with her. But I would have to ask Seaborn, I think that fathers are, of our generation, more often are window into the world. And it sounds like your dad, to me, from what I knew of him, had a lot of frustrations in his career as an artist. And I wonder how much you don't want to kind of betray him or go past him by going out into the world. Is that part of it?
I think there is an issue about that, because he obviously was much more highly trained in the traditional arts, like Renaissance artists, kind of thing, Yale School of Fine Arts and Padua. And so I always felt like I could never be that good. But then I remember when I had my first big show, it was up in San Francisco in this gallery, and he came and he had tears in his eyes. Mm. And I thought, well, that was because he was so excited about, you know, his daughter being in this big show or in this beautiful gallery. But then there was something, too, that I sensed at times with him, which was a kind of a don't ever go farther than I went, or don't ever get better than me, you know, I know mm-hmm. that he had that with his sons, but I don't know, you know, with his daughters, because I was in the same realm, I wonder if there might have been something.
But you also look like your dad, too.
What?
You look like your dad. I mean, you resemble your dad in certain physical ways.
Right.
Which is a big thing.
That's true. There is a lot of it. And I have that same kind of energy and passion that he had.
And I think, again, that's what makes life so interesting is if we have the wherewithal to dive into all the dynamics of those family relationships, I think that they are become our fodder for art, introspection, creating more dynamic and healthy relationships in our adult life. I think one of the great beauties of aging is having the confidence to look back and dig around in our childhood relationships and take the nuggets and let go of the things that don't serve us any longer. And Sabrin, I appreciate you calling in. I look forward to seeing you on January the 10th at Buttonwood Winery. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Polly Frost. We're talking about father-daughter relationships and the complexity within them and how there isn't a lot written about them. Although one, you know, famous example would be Little Mermaid and the dynamic between Ariel and her father and how she, you know, went against her father, this all-powerful king of the ocean, and had to be her own person and all that she gave up to and risk to live her authentic life and how her father slowly came around. Like, I think about that Disney adaptation of that story and what that message was for our young girls. In some ways, it has this negative message of it's okay to give up your gifts and reject your family to chase a man, which to me is not the healthiest example of the story. But then the other side story of, you know, if we believe so strongly in ourselves that we have to find the strength to stand up to our strong parental figures, our father figures, and to hold our own until our fathers can then step back and see us for who we are. I don't know. I wonder how that rests with you. 805-781-3875. Dave, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth and Polly. I've been going through a period of about 3 years of being estranged from my two daughters, and I have two children. I actually went through a divorce 30 years ago, and I'm in my late 60s. My daughters are in their 40s. And for some odd reason, one of them will talk to me sparingly. The other one doesn't want to talk at all and won't return phone calls, doesn't answer the phone. And I'm trying to make plans to go see that daughter, and it's kind of hard to make plans when you don't know if they're going to be there, and I don't want to show up on the doorstep. So I've been trying to figure out, this has been going on for about 3 years out of a long period of time. And I know the only thing I can think that's coincidental with it is that my ex-wife was married and her husband died about 3 years ago, and there were some comments made that said there was nothing step about him because he was a stepfather. And kind of when that happened, I felt like there's not much attachment or there's not much communication going on, and I try and communicate with them, and especially the one that doesn't return phone calls and doesn't want to talk to me. I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions. This is a common problem of estrangement from children of a divorce.
It's very common. And it's interesting because you made that connection between their stepfather passing away and kind of the revisiting of conflicts that they might have felt with you when they were younger. You know, that probably when the stepfather came into their lives, they were able to attach a lot of those, that father loss that they felt to the stepfather. And then with him passing, I think a lot of the brunt of maybe that anger resurfaced with what they felt they missed out on with you. So that is very common. But I'm really curious to know, like, what is your hopes for the relationship? And what was there a time that it was good with the girls?
It was good up until about that time. And they would communicate and I would be able to visit with them. And we actually did things together. But that's my hope is that, I mean, it's by this time, the rest of my family has passed away. And the only remnants of any semblance of a family are those two daughters. And so I'm kind of like completely alone at this point, and it's getting harder and harder, especially around this time of year.
Absolutely. Do they have children? Are you a grandfather?
They have, between the two of them, they have 8 grandchildren.
And what's your relationship with them?
Ironically, the grandchildren seem to be fine. They come out to visit. One of them lives on the East Coast, and they came out and visited, and they seem to be fine. At least I think that it's fine. There is a little bit of strangeness in the last 3 years, I would say, with some of them, in that they, at least one of the two daughters, the one that actually does talk to me, they communicate every now and then, but they certainly wouldn't call or say we want to come see it or anything like that.
So in our given amount of time, I'm going to give you two ideas, okay, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
One, again, I keep going back to, sometimes writing our feelings down is a great way to try to bridge that gap that, you know, speaking in person can sometimes feel threatening. But I also encourage you to try to build those relationships with your grandchildren, because they don't have the history with you that your daughters have. And if you're able to build some strong alliances with a couple of the grandchildren, and your daughters may see you through a different light when their children are having good, healthy relationships with you. And sometimes
right. That
can be the most healing of things, that grandparent relationships can sometimes be healthier and more fortifying than the parent-child. So I encourage you to take that route, because you have a lot of grandchildren to choose from, to try to reach out to some of the grandchildren and build those alliances and give your daughters the space to see you through a different lens, which is that lens that your their children see you through.
Right.
So I encourage you to try those two things, and I also encourage you not to give up, because the more you continue to be there and present and trying to be a part of their life, you know, that's all you can do, and to not quit, because if they are playing out a bit of maybe the rejection they felt when the divorce happened, it's a bit of that, I'll keep pushing you until you go away, because I assume that at some point you're going to go away. So unfortunately, the onus is on you to not go away, to no matter how difficult they are, to keep pushing and being present and trying to engage. And I hope a couple of those things help to enhance your holiday season. I appreciate you calling in. And this has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. My guest has been Polly Frost. And Polly, how can people come see your one-woman show?
It's on Sunday, January 10th at 3 p.m. at Buttonwood Winery in Solvang. It's a gorgeous location. It's for adults only, because it's a winery, and they can purchase glasses of wine during the show, and it's by reservation only. It's $15 per person. They can phone me for reservations. My reservation line is 805-450-9955, or they can email me pollyfrost@me.com.
And can people bring food in?
No, they cannot bring food in.
So eat before you come.
Eat before you come. Turn off your cell phones. But you can drink a glass of wine, and there will be some snacks there.
And I also think it's going to be an incredibly moving afternoon of live theater. Polly Frost brings over 25 years experience writing about life and relationships and journeys. And this live show, this one-woman show where she acts out her role and her father in this relationship, is going to be something that I think everyone will relate to on some level. We only get one father, so why was I given mine? Thank you, Polly Frost, for being my guest today. And as always, thank you for being a part of our listening community. I'm going to leave you today with a song from John Mayer that talks about those strength of family systems and how the relationships we have with our fathers play out in our relationships as we grow. And John Mayer, for all intents and purposes, captures it exactly. Until next Tuesday, I wish you well, and thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX.
I've done all I can to stand on the steps with my heart in my hand. Now I'm starting to see maybe it's got nothing to do with me. Fathers, be good to your daughters. Daughters will love like you do. Girls become lovers who turn into mothers. So mothers, be good to your daughters too. See you. she's been standing in since the day she saw him walking away. Now she's left cleaning up the mess he made. So fathers, be good to your daughters. Daughters will love like you do. Girls become lovers who turn into mothers. So mothers, be good to your daughters too. Boys, you can pray. You'll find out how much they can take. Boys will be strong, and boys soldier on. But boys won't be gone without warmth from a woman's good, good heart. Daughters too. So mothers, be good to your daughters too.